Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. On February 27, 2008, the Supreme Court decided the case of Federal Express v. Holowecki. The court held that an intake questionnaire submitted to the EEOC may suffice for the charge of discrimination that must be submitted pursuant to the ADEA. Marquette Law Professor Richard Essenberg discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Essenberg.
I'm Rick Essenberg from Marquette University Law School. In Federal Express Corporation v. Holowecki, the United States Supreme Court tried to entangle an EEOC mess. But in the end, it may have simply sanctioned a continuing lack of clarity in agency unresponsiveness. Here's the problem. The Age Discrimination in Employment Act states that no civil action may be commenced until 60 days after a charge has been filed with the EEOC. If a charge has been filed, the Act requires the EEOC to inform the employer of that charge and attempt to resolve the dispute through informal methods of conciliation, conference, and persuasion. This obviously makes it important for us to know when an employee's filing with the EEOC constitutes a charge. Employees approach the EEOC, usually without counsel, and the agency's procedures are necessarily informal. Not every time an employee contacts the agency does he or she intend to file a charge. Employees who feel they may have been discriminated against approach the agency for information as well as enforcement. But if an employee eventually wants to sue, she must have managed to file a charge. She can't go to court until 60 days after she has done so, and perhaps even more importantly, if she doesn't manage to file something that is regarded as a charge within 300 days of the alleged discriminatory act, her claim is time-barred. It's important for the EEOC to know whether a charge has been filed as well. For if a charge has been filed, it has a mandatory legal obligation to inform the employer and attempt to informally resolve the dispute, reflecting a congressional judgment in favor of an attempt at pre-litigation reconciliation. Now, ideally, either the Act or the EEOC, whether by procedure or practice, would make it clear what a charge is. Unfortunately, that's not the case. The Act does not define a charge, and EEOC regulations are unclear. 29 CFR Section 1626(3) says, "A charge shall mean a statement filed with the Commission which alleges that a prospective defendant has engaged in or is about to engage in prohibited discrimination." 1626(8)(a) says, "A charge should contain the names, addresses, and phone numbers of the charging and charged parties, a statement of facts describing the alleged discriminatory acts, the number of employees of the charged employer, and a statement indicating whether the charging party has initiated state proceedings." But then 1626(8)(b) seems to say that a charge is nevertheless sufficient if it meets the requirements of 1626(6). That is, it is in writing, names the respondent, and generally alleges the discriminatory act. In Federal Express Corporation v. Holowecki, the plaintiff, Holowecki, alleged that certain new performance standards adopted by Federal Express constituted age discrimination. She had filed a form called an intake questionnaire, which, while often used to prepare a charge, has as its stated purpose the facilitation of pre-charge counseling and a determination of whether the agency would have jurisdiction over any potential charges. There is a different form maintained by the agency for a charge, but she did not complete it, nor did the EEOC prepare one on her behalf. However, in addition to filling out this intake questionnaire, she did file an accompanying affidavit, arguably containing the minimal information required by the regulations, and this, she argued, should be enough. She urged the court to adopt a bright-line rule, arguing that a charge is sufficient when the commission receives a written statement that names the employer and generally alleges discriminatory acts. In response, the employer, Federal Express, argued for another type of bright-line rule. although the EEOC, appearing as amicus in the case, argued that Holowecki's filing did constitute a charge, although it urged a somewhat different standard for determining whether it, in fact, met the requirements of a charge. The agency had not treated her filing as such at the time it was filed. At least it did not fulfill its statutory obligation to attempt informal resolution. Federal Express argued that, in service of the congressional policy in favor of pre-litigation reconciliation, no filing should be treated as a charge unless the EEOC so treated it, i.e., until the EEOC informs the employer and initiates a conciliatory process. The rules proposed by the plaintiff and defendant, whatever their other merits, did have the advantage of clarity, but the EEOC argues against both. The agency urged the court to reject the plaintiff's proposed rule because it would require treating almost all inquiries as charges. This would, in addition to imposing a burden on the agency to engage in pre-litigation conciliation, impinge upon its educational function. If, EEOC argued, almost all filings are charges, then EEOC would have to inform the employer in almost all cases. This might discourage employees from informally consulting the agency. The EEOC also urged the court to reject the Federal Express's proposed rule because, although the statute imposes upon the agency a mandatory obligation to conduct pre-litigation conciliation, the statute does not say, and practical concerns may militate against reading it to require, that a plaintiff's obligation to sue is contingent upon the agency's fulfillment of its statutory obligation. It seems clear that the EEOC does not fulfill its mandated statutory duty in every case, and it may be unwise to condition a plaintiff's right to sue upon the fulfillment of a duty that the agency is unlikely to, in every case, fulfill. The agency argued, and the court adopted, a somewhat less bright line. A 7-justice majority concluded that any filing, but only those filings, which an objective observer would reasonably construe as requesting the agency to activate its enforcement machinery and remedial processes, constitutes a charge. In so concluding, the court acknowledged that reasonable arguments could be made that the agency should adopt a standard giving more guidance to filers and making it clear that someone who wishes to file a charge must make an explicit request for the initiation of some type of adversarial process. But it left the adoption of those rules to the discretion of the agency. Justice Thomas, joined by Justice Scalia, dissented. Drawing on the customary meaning of the term charge, he argued that for something to constitute a charge, it must not request any action, but rather a particular form of action, i.e., that method of enforcement which requires the filing of a charge and the commencement of an adversarial process. In Justice Thomas's view, the majority's objective request for action test is tantamount to a rule that a charge is anything the EEOC says it is. While that might be something of an overstatement, it is clear after Holowecki that a charge is anything but only those things that a court says it is after the fact. A majority noted that the prevalence of pro se filings and the concomitant need for forms to be easy to file and presumably to identify requires a flexible rule. But does the decision really serve the needs of an agency dealing with pro se filings and the need for informal proceedings? The court could have achieved additional clarity by adopting the plaintiff's rule, That would have forced the EEOC to adopt regulations and procedures that more adequately explain the claimant's option to file a charge or not at the outset. It might even achieve this additional clarity by adopting Justice Thomas's view, requiring a fairly explicit statement of intent to file a charge, again, presumably forcing the EEOC to adopt rules that provide for greater and earlier clarity. It may have even done so by adopting Federal Express's rule, requiring EEOC to act on whatever it regarded as a charge, again, forcing it to adopt procedures that make clear what is and is not a charge, and ensuring that the congressional policy regarding pre-suit conciliation was served. In other words, any one of these choices might have made it more likely that EEOC would adopt rules and procedures that would clean up the mess, providing a greater opportunity for employees to file something short of a charge, or making it less likely that an employee who intends to file a charge would fall short. What the EEOC could not do, had the court adopted any of these approaches, is continue to treat items as charges for purposes of the plaintiff's right to sue, while ignoring its obligations to engage in pre-litigation conciliation. What it could not do is continue a regime in which a plaintiff can hope that what she filed was a charge, with no assurance of agency guidance making clear, before the fact, just what a charge constitutes. Instead, the court opted to make the best of the mess, adopting a rule accommodating the EEOC's lack of clarity, although presumably its standard will be applied liberally to preserve employee claims. In doing so, however, there is little incentive for greater clarity in EEOC rules and procedures. The EEOC has modified its procedures since the time of Holowecki's filing, although it is unclear whether or how much additional clarity those changes will bring. In accommodating the mess, the court may have ensured that it will continue.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.